All Along the Watchtower, from a new CD titled Postcards of the Hanging, Grateful Dead performed the songs of Bob Dylan, produced by yours truly. I'm being interviewed by Grateful Dead Almanac editor Gary Lambert.
You had Bob Weir's ears for some of this. You sent him some versions of the tunes, and he gave some feedback, didn't he?
Yes, indeed. Bob was very much supportive of this project and took an active part in making the selections. I did most of the narrowing down and got things down to two or three versions of various songs and then gave him CDs of those. There were some decisions that had to be made. There wasn't room on the single CD for every Grateful Dead cover. So I sort of decided arbitrarily somewhat that Stuck Inside a Mobile with the Memphis Blues Again and Queen Jane Approximately were sort of either or. And I went with Stuck Inside a Mobile because it's a little more upbeat and we needed more brisk tempo stuff because this is a very ballad heavy record. And just in terms of real estate, Knocking on Heaven's Door would have eaten up two slots. You know, it's such a long tune, especially the best versions of it just go on for a while. So I had to make some decisions about what not to use. And Bobby was totally, you know, in agreement with those selections. And then I would give him two and three versions of the songs. And he called me up and said, I like this one, don't like that one. And we went with his selections wherever possible. At the last minute, we wound up not using the Greek Theater 85 version of She Belongs to Me because of a technical glitch in the recording. We went with the Chula Vista one, which was my first choice anyway. But, you know, it was very, very much a collaborative process. A lot of people with big ears contributed to this.
Start out standing, proud to steal her anything she sees. You start out standing, proud to steal her anything she sees.
Let's talk a little bit about the relationship between Dylan and the Dead. Not just the one that transpired when they wound up meeting each other, working together, but sort of a synergistic one that existed way back in the folk era when they were both of that generation of musicians who were picking up tunes from Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music and exploring what Greil Marcus called the old weird America. Michael Gilmore, who wrote wonderful liner notes for the album, discusses that to some extent in his notes, and wanted to get your comments on that process.
Well, Dylan and the Dead came from the folk world and from the era when the song was the thing. You know, there was rock and roll, and there was folk music, and there were various little side trips into jug band music and stuff like that. But really, what it's all about is the song. And Bob Dylan is the greatest songwriter of our generation, I think. And he's got some pretty stiff competition. But I think there was something about Dylan's tunes that all the guys in the Dead could relate to. Phil Lesh told me in a 1981 interview about driving a mail truck in San Francisco and having a decidedly illicit transistor radio on his dashboard of the van while he was doing this. And he said that he heard Subterranean Homesick Blues on KFRC, the top 40 station. He said, "F*** me, that's Bob Dylan on the radio." And he said, "I pulled over and I forgot about my route and I just sat there and listened to it and it was the greatest thing." And he said, "They must have thought so too at the station because they played it like three times an hour for the rest of the day." And Jerry told Blair Jackson and me in an interview around that same time, you know, that Dylan just had that way of just hitting that nail on the head, particularly that blonde on blonde era. There was a certain sort of bitterness that he put across so very well in songs like Positively 4th Street. You know, the psychedelic imagery of the stuff that he was doing fit perfectly with the Grateful Dead's mentality, I think. And also, my own personal observation is that Dylan's tunes describe a landscape that is very much like ours, but also very much his own. But very much the same way Grateful Dead music does, you can sort of project yourself into that world and make it fit, make yourself fit into it somehow, or make it fit into your world. Listening to Bob Dylan songs as performed by the Grateful Dead, I always heard these lines coming out of there that related directly to things that were going on in the Grateful Dead world, in my own life and stuff. You know, that's the one of the things that I like most, or that makes a song great, as far as I'm concerned, is that thing of universalizing the personal and personalizing the universal. And Dylan had a way of making stuff that was so utterly his own, and yet so completely universal, global, you know? So it's not even slightly surprising that as savvy a performer and songwriter as Jerry Garcia would connect deeply with Bob Dylan, or that Bob Weir would find stuff in there that worked for him as the very different kind of singer that he is. And that's another thing that really needs to be brought up. That material worked for everybody. Phil didn't do very many Dylan tunes, but Phil would sing just like Tom Thumb's Blues, which sort of fit his character in a way. I called it droll. You called it sardonic. Both work. It's each guy checking in from his corner of that world, and the Dylan tunes that work for Jerry and the Dylan tunes that work for Weir are different ones, but they both work equally well.
And interestingly, they're almost, because of the interpretation, they're different songs in a way than from when Dylan did them. I mean, I always thought Desolation Row, you know, Dylan sings it with just the most sardonic, again, that word, sardonic, sort of an end of the world quality to it. Weir is more like an innocent abroad in that song.
You know, one time I heard a tape of one of the very first performances of Desolation Row at Forest Hills. Uh-huh. I don't know what year that was, 65 maybe, yeah, somewhere back there. And one of the things that knocked me out about it was how much laughter there was in the audience. And I happened to be sitting with Greil Marcus at the time. I was transferring this tape for him. And I expressed this to him, and he said, oh, this stuff was just hilarious in those days. And it's funny because by the time it hit the Grateful Dead stage, the times were so different and the setting was so different that I think it took on a lot more urgency in Bobby's universe than it did in the place that Dylan was singing it from back in the day.
Well, I think there was also, you know, there was almost a quasi-religious quality attributed to Dylan at a certain point, you know, especially during that period when he was absent from the scene after the motorcycle accident, and just mythology about him grew up. And I think people started to miss the humor in the music a lot. You know, there was all this meta-analysis of the lyrics and, you know, what does it all mean, but some of those songs are indeed hilarious, and some of them are some of the most sarcastic music ever written, and some, some of it's also full of rage and full of passion. It's there's so much stuff going on there.
That's a very good point about how seriously Dylan was taken for a long time there, and how seriously he's still taken. I think one of the ways that Jerry Garcia and Bob Dylan connected was that they both were the victims of their own greatness on a certain level, that they were both taken so very, very seriously by people that they began to be wary of every utterance. I heard that, you know, Jerry told that to somebody way, way back, as early as like 1968, that he stopped talking on stage so much because so much of what he said was taken so very seriously. I mean, he didn't say nothing at all, but it did reach a point where he measured his words very carefully and wouldn't make the same kind of jokes and stuff that he did in the earlier days, because a lot of people tend to take things and run with them, you know. So I think that was part of the thing that drew Jerry and Bob close when they started hanging out together in the 80s and when they were doing the rehearsals for the tour and stuff, which, by the way, leads me to deliver the very good news that we got a song from the rehearsals to use on the record. This project also had a lot of help and support from Bob Dylan and his organization. We were given permission to go through the rehearsals from May and June of 1987 and find one track from there that was particularly noteworthy. I found dozens of things that were really good and should be on a record someday. And if I get my druthers, someday we'll do a CD of material from the rehearsals. But we were allowed to choose one, and I sent a bunch of things to Jeff Rosen, who's Dylan's business manager in New York, and he narrowed it down to like two things, and we wound up using Man of Peace from a rehearsal in June of 87 as the 11th track on this record. And to my great delight, Jeff also gave me permission to use a couple of the other things from the rehearsals on this radio show.
Oh, great.
So we have, and there were, you know, the rehearsals were phenomenal. They went through tons and tons of material, not just Dylan's tunes, but the Dead showed them. There's just a snippet of this, which I won't get to play on the radio, but I did hear going by just a 30-second passage of Franklin's Tower with Dylan playing harmonica on it, things like that. And there was a hilarious conversation where they're doing that, and I think there was a little bit of Fire on the Mountain also, and you hear somebody say, oh yeah, we got a mess of these songs that are only like two chords, you know, they're real easy. And Dylan saying, yeah, let's hear some more of those.
Yeah, you really get a palpable sense of the shared affinities during those sessions, because there's that sitting on the back porch picking feel to it, like, let's try this one, remember that one.
Yeah, well, one thing you'll be hearing in this program is Stealing, which, of course, was one of the first recordings the Dead ever made. It might have been the first single they ever made as the Grateful Dead.
And it was in the Mother McCree's Uptown Jug Champions book as well.
That's right. Well, Dylan knew it. And there's a story, there's a version of it that I think is circulating on the bootleg CDs of the rehearsals with David Nelson playing mandolin. But a couple days later, they revisited that song with Dylan himself playing mandolin.